Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we're going to have some fun this hour. Daniel Golden is our guest, owner of the independent bookstore Boswell Books in Milwaukee, and he looks terrific today. I got to tell you, I normally don't comment on people's clothing, but he's got a really sharp... We should get a picture of Daniel. Can we do that to put on our Facebook page? Because he looks really good. He's matching and cheerful looking. He's always cheerful. He's been described as one of the best booksellers in the country. We'll just make him the best. He's compiled a list of summer reads for us, fiction, nonfiction, children's books. It's a wonderful, wonderful list. And if you haven't been to Boswell, it's a terrific bookstore. Not only do they sell books, but he is giving us something like 250 events every year, author visits and great events with community. He really is a wonderful person to have living here, and thank goodness for this independent bookstore, Boswell Books. We're delighted to have Daniel here. Please get your pens and papers. We will eventually have his list with some wonderful descriptions of these books that he and his staff wrote, and it makes you want to go and get all of these books. But get your pencil and paper ready. We'll put it on Facebook later in the day on the Kathleen Dunn Show, but your recommendations as well, 800-486-86. 855 is our number, 800-486-8655. Email talk. What else do I have to tell you? Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, Twitter, at K Dunn Show, and that'll do it. Hello, Daniel. Happy summer.
Hello. I blush from your introduction, just like the pink of the shirt.
But it does. It looks so good with the hair and everything. I can't say enough about it. I just can't say enough. So we really do a different, at least I do, a different kind of reading in the summer. I did what I did about 3 weeks ago is I decided what I want to do is learn a whole lot about somebody who I really admire. So I've spent the last 3 weeks with Michelangelo. And I reread The Agony and the Ecstasy, which I ordered from your bookstore, and Irving Stone. And it was a little more tedious than when I had read it the first time. But I did it with this book, you know, of Michelangelo creations, masterpieces. And then I did a lecture series. I'm not done with a lecture series all at the same time. So it's just been... And I told KP, we've got to do a show on Michelangelo. But we haven't figured out how to do that yet. But what a great thing to do.
You could interview yourself at this point because you're so knowledgeable. I love that. I love the idea of themes.
It's kind of fun.
When I wasn't reading so much for the upcoming events, because you have to be
right.
Once you book the author, you have to really – you can't read them all, but you try to read as many as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I would do that. I would say – I'm going to visit Kentucky, so I'm going to read some books set in Kentucky, or I'm not going to Italy, so I'm going to read some books set in Italy. It's a wonderful and pairing that with movies and some nonfiction reading and, you know, a little search engineing.
Yeah, you remember it more, I think.
I think so.
Yeah. So I have this idea now. Nobody is as enthused as I am about this idea, is to do some of these great figures in world history and learn about them. You know, like a book club about great figures in history.
It's another book
club. We were supposed to read a
yes.
book. What were we supposed to read? I didn't read it, whatever it was. Did you?
I think your listeners will have to remind us
okay.
what we were supposed to do.
Good. Okay, we're off the hook.
I have two obligations. Last year I had one. I agreed to read Huck Finn, and someone bought one for me for my birthday. Still not read. I've read a few pages now. And then I agreed to join a Middlemarch book club, but – there's no set date when they're discussing it. They just start sending me emails periodically with 3-page-long descriptions of their memories of Middlemarch. And I'm like, I don't know if this is going to get me to read it. But I bought this beautiful new edition. It's called the Penguin Drop Cap series. It's beautifully designed. It's 26 books, each representing a different author, published by Penguin. And it's a 26-color rainbow and beautiful colored end pages. And I thought, well, I want George Eliot. It's bright yellow. It's the yellow of your headphones.
Really?
It's beautiful.
Interesting. I'm surprised you haven't read Middlemarch. I haven't either, to tell you the truth. It's on the bookcase. It's been sitting there for years.
If I would mention that I was not an English major, but a math and Russian major.
I know.
I would say that and when I desperately wanted to take literature, I had all these all these requirements. And so I think I wound up with one Russian literature class, one English literature class, one comparative literature class. So my and then I read – I have been trying to read classics on my own over the past many years since college. But things do get in the way, and you do take longer with a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it goes slow. Still committed. I'm just
– good.
Having
all right.
Issues.
Well, we'll think about that book we were supposed to read. All right, let's go to the list. Where's my first page that I got yesterday? The first book, the first book that you wrote up here, I thought, there's my vacation read this summer, The Vacationers. It sounds wacky and fun and a good vacation read.
And still very smart. Emma Straub had a book, her first novel was called The Laura Lamont's Life in Pictures. It was, I thought it was a lovely historical novel. Started in Door County about sort of seeing this actress through her inner self, but it was very earnest. And the one criticism that I did hear periodically is, why couldn't these be as funny and as sharp as her short stories collection, which had gotten wonderful acclaim? Well, sure enough, that's the way this direction, this book did. And when I saw the book, I thought, it's very bright, beautiful aqua sea with a little figure on it. And I thought, oh, that's the same color as the Maria Semple, Where'd You Go, Bernadette? I wonder if they're trying to mimic that, which people do with author,
sure.
with these cover shots. And so I wrote to the publisher. I read the book. Sharon read the book. She, knowable characters, love, loss. It's a family that vacations together in Mallorca. The parents don't tell the kids that they're separated. He's had an affair. One daughter is kind of looking for her first love. The son has married this woman who's not the supposed intellectual equal of the rest of the family. And the best friend and his partner are trying to adopt a child. So there's lots of complications. Very smart, very fun. And it's been a big breakout. It did exactly what they hoped.
Huh.
It's been, they talk about the sophomore slump. They talk about these books, the second novel that doesn't equal the promise of the first. But more and more, we're just seeing when the sophomore swing, like where you put everything into the first novel, but sometimes maybe you put too many, like maybe the sink was the wrong designer sink for that particular novel when you were throwing the kitchen sink in. And so I felt like this book is much more relaxed and a lot of fun. Yeah,
good.
We highly recommend it.
All right, good. That's my vacation read. Nonfiction. Let's go to nonfiction. We'll go back and forth.
Well, this is one of the things that I was going to say about the Tastemakers is that this is my true escapist, no commitment reading, because I've got no event. I haven't promised anyone I'd read it. The only thing that happened was I went to see David Sacks at a book convention and decided to wait in the line to get the book signed. And he would come up to people and say, what's your favorite food trend? I was like, put on the spot. Well, I'm not going to say cupcakes because that's too cliche. I said, okay.
Oh, you brought us some great cupcakes.
Yeah.
Oh, you got us going on cupcakes. Yeah.
I'm going to go with flaxseed. Though flaxseed has actually been replaced by chia seed as the hot seed of the moment. And this is a book that chapter by chapter looks at everything that makes a food trend, from chefs. He talks to a Peruvian chef who's trying to make Peruvian cuisine break out. He talks to agriculturists who are trying to develop black rice and working with chefs. He talks to marketing people who are trying to make the Red Prince apple the next big apple after the Honeycrisp.
Interesting.
I thought it was fascinating. Lots of interesting detail. He talked about why. I thought there was a little overemphasis on cupcake on the jacket because it's really not. There's one chapter on cupcakes, how they kind of broke out with Sex and the City, even though they really weren't shown on Sex. It was one episode. They didn't even mention Magnolia Bakery. It's just the Magnolia Bakery sign was in the background. And lo and behold, like 5 years later, when they're doing Sex and the City tours, everybody wants to go to Magnolia Bakery. But there are interesting things about how bacon, for example, exploded between 2000 and 2010. Bacon was definitely on the decline. There was a worry about fat. And the Atkins diet turned that around a bit. But more than that, it was one of the things that led to the road of the bacon revival is fast food restaurants started cutting the fat out of the burgers to be healthy. But then after an E. coli scare, started cooking them well done. Well, they were completely tasteless. And they needed something to put on the bacon to give it flavor. And so the bacon, you know, the Pork Council started convincing people to put bacon on sandwiches. That's just one step in a long process. But all kinds of stories like this.
Yes. What's the name of the book?
It's called The Tastemakers, Why We're Crazy for Cupcakes but Fed Up with Fondue, and it's by David Sacks.
Okay, David Sacks. That sounds great.
Yeah,
David
I really Sacks. Enjoyed it.
It's always wonderful to read about how things come to be, and you never would have imagined, oh, that's how that happened. It's funny how many people are into bacon, too. I mean, I know vegetarians who only will eat bacon. They succumb to bacon.
One of the things he does in the bacon chapter is go to a very big bacon festival in Chicago. It is not the biggest bacon festival because that's in Des Moines.
Ah, I guess that would make sense, wouldn't it? Well, my nonfiction would be – I just have a few because I've been immersed in Michelangelo. You know, we just had this guy on, too, and he this book was fascinating to me. Yeah, I don't know if it's a bestseller or anything. The Second Amendment, a biography, Michael Waldman, just came out, president of the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU, and has done what few people have done, and that's look at the whole history of guns in this country from revolutionary times up until 2008 when the Supreme Court, after all these years, ruled that it was a right for individuals to have guns. It goes through the Civil War. It goes through World War II. It goes through the assassinations of the 60s. It's really fascinating. Really fascinating.
And completely up your alley. A perfect book for you.
I guess so. Except for summer when I need lighter
reading.
Right.
It's a little heavy for summer. But yeah. You can read it on an overcast day.
Or when it's 40 degrees at night. You're right. All right. Another fiction one.
I was going to mention one of the things we were talking about was how there does seem to be a lot of escapist books, but there actually was a very literary novel that broke out this year, All the Light We Cannot See by Anthony Doerr. I have a wonderful recommendation from Conrad, one of my booksellers. It is a World War II story, children, an orphan German boy and a blind girl, French girl, and their stories are told in parallel and, of course, eventually meet together. This is one of those books that one of the things we do at the bookstore is sort of when people ask me what a book's like or whether people like it, I haven't always read the book, but I can almost in my head come up with a percentage of people liking it or not liking it. So for example, I'll say for The Goldfinch, which, you know, is probably the book of the year. It just won another major
Did
award.
Did it really?
The Carnegie Medal from the American Library
wow.
Association. And I say, you know, it's about – in our store, it's about 19 out of 20 people really love the book. I would say there's probably – the book is so popular now, there are probably people buying the book who don't know what they're getting into. It's a big, fat Dickensian novel. But I do say to people, you know – the main complaint that those 1 out of 20 people have is it falls apart in the last third. Not everybody feels that way, but you have to kind of aggregate. We're sort of like one of those websites that has all the reviews, except they're all in our head. And so for All the Light We Cannot See by Anthony Doerr, I would say it's been 9 out of 10 people have really loved the book. Hmm. And if there's one complaint about the book, it's that the Doerr, after a number of novels and short stories where he was called the writer's writer, like all the writers loved him, booksellers loved him, but he couldn't sell. This book exploded, and the difference is very short chapters.
Oh.
So almost like a Dan Brown Da Vinci Code.
Yeah.
And so every so often I get a person who comes into the store and says, I like the book, but the chapters are so short. I feel like he's, you know, that he doesn't. A lack of respect. Like they wanted it more intense. And I thought, but this is the very thing that crossed him over.
Oh,
so, you know, right. I believe that was one. It's a very good story. It's World War II, which people like. Historical novels tend to take a writer who is a wonderful writer and give them the structure of the plot that they need.
Mm-hmm.
And but that's one of the, you know, it's the trade-off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if to make something more accessible, you still have this really great writer with really great writing, but the chapters are short.
That sounds good. And everybody I know is reading The Goldfinch. Or they've read The Goldfinch. I haven't read The Goldfinch yet. Maybe that's another vacation read.
I use two of my bookseller's recommendations for it because people do come in and they say, you haven't read The Goldfinch, as if it's some sort of like I've got to go put on a dunce cap or something.
Oh, Daniel.
But it's 1,000, you know, it's close to 1,000 pages.
I know.
I need to, it means five other books aren't going to get read.
Okay.
And one of those, and now I have a tendency to be a leader, not a follower. And so with the exception of it, is if I have a number of booksellers reading a book and it's early, I will definitely jump into it to be part of it, to like make it something bigger. So, for example, we have a book coming out, a novel that two of my booksellers really loved. It's a back to school novel more than but it's coming in a few weeks. It's August, you know, mid-August. It's called Dear Committee Members by Julie
Schumacher. Oh, that
sounded
interesting.
It is on there. And it is a novel. It's a short novel, and it's completely told in letters of recommendation. I mean, it's very silly. But it actually has some gravitas to it. It's this very put-upon English professor who's everything spinning out of control in his school. He's an English professor, so there's no funding for anything. And the sciences and economics are, you know, basically taking over their building. And so he's at the same time recommending – he has this champ student that he's championing for a residence. And as he doesn't get it, he's like going to lower and lower places. He's got people in the department who are – coming to him for recommendations for trying to get out of the department. And of course, he's got all these students looking for completely inappropriate recommendations to be things like nannies and fast food workers.
Oh, no.
So,
oh.
And this was so, oh. I probably wouldn't have read it. We do have the, you know, but my booksellers, Jen and Mel, were so excited about the book that how could I, and my rep was so excited. It was like, well, it does become sort of hypnotic and you
right.
have to get into
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds good. Elizabeth Gilbert, has she been to the store already or is she coming this week?
That is Wednesday.
This Wednesday.
Signature of All Things. We're so excited. A very interesting historical novel. Almost sold out, actually. This one, the publishers asked us to ticket. And sometimes that works and sometimes that doesn't. And one of the things that's always tricky is even with a paperback reprint, it's really hard to get any attention until the book actually comes out. And so the book sales were, you know, our ticket sales were kind of moving along. And then last week when the book came out, they exploded. So I would go – our website's baselbooks.com and, you know, you can still get the link to go buy the tickets. She's – you know, we're doing it should be a really fun evening.
So. Yeah. You know, and I must pat you on the back again. I just think it's – I don't know how you do it, but 250 and maybe it's even more events a year is absolutely phenomenal, Daniel. It's just phenomenal. Do you feel like you have to do that to make an independent bookstore work or do you just really love doing all of that?
It's a little of both. And sadly, I there are plenty of independent bookstores that are not doing quite as many. I mean, my idols, Politics and Prose, University Bookstore Seattle and Elliott Band Seattle, Powell's in Portland, they do a ton of events. And Books and Books in Coral Gables, ton of events. I mean, they do programs that I can't even dream about. Books and Books in Miami has started a complete reading series in Spanish as well as English.
Ooh.
And which I thought was terrific. We have in Bellingham Village Books and also Square Books in Oxford, they do radio shows where they interview the authors on the air. We've been trying to – you and I are trying to come up with something like that for fall.
Right.
We've got ideas, but we don't want to release them
yet. We have really good ideas. If Daniel's involved, we got really good ideas. Daniel KP is involved. We got some good ideas.
But you know what? We're already trying to do interesting things. We like doing things at schools. We do things. We're doing our first event in August at Purple Door, which is an ice cream store.
Oh, wonderful. And ice cream and new author?
Yeah.
Oh, that's perfect combination.
I think he was just on Wisconsin Public Radio. The book's called Scoop, and it's an ice cream shop in Hayward. And
oh,
it's
yes.
his memoir.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. it was. Well, you need to go and you need to wear that shirt.
This would be cherry vanilla, I guess.
We need to pause for a moment and take phone calls, too. Here's how you join our conversation with Daniel Golden, owner of the independent bookstore Boswell Books in Milwaukee. He's a wonderful bookseller. He's highly creative. I don't think he sleeps. How much do you sleep? Do you not sleep?
Not enough.
That's what I figured. Yeah, you're getting a lot done because you just don't sleep a lot. Did I give you the number? 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we do want to tell you, because we probably won't get to all the books, he's done a wonderful thing and not just given us the names of books, but he and his staff have written up these descriptions of the books, and they're wonderfully written. So those will be on our Facebook page for you to get your summer reading suggestions. To you momentarily, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Daniel Golden is here now. Our phone lines are humming, so let's go to them. Scott in La Crosse, hello.
Hey there, Kathleen.
Hi, Scott.
I've got a nonfiction for you.
Good.
But I think you'll like it.
Good.
And my guess is your husband's maybe already familiar with it.
Is it about Stalingrad?
John Feinstein, the sports writer.
Okay. Oh, all right.
The one who wrote Season on the Brink about Bobby Knight and Civil War about the Army-Navy football game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyhow, his newest is called Where Nobody Knows Your Name.
Okay.
And what it's about is it's triple A baseball players, many of whom have already been in the majors for either a brief or in some cases quite a long career, but injuries and various things have derailed them, and they're in the minors. Some of them giving it one last shot. He's got managers, even umpires. It's just a real fascinating look at baseball, and you know everybody knows about injuries in football, right? And how brutal that can be.
Mm-hmm.
But in its own way, baseball is every bit as well, not as badly, but it's certainly injury plagued on its own as the Brewers could some years tell you.
Yeah. Well, I hate to describe myself particularly on the radio, but I will. I'm somewhat a fair weather fan, but because you know you like to cheer, you like to have a team doing well so you can cheer even more. But it is really a fascinating game. I've grown to, can't live in my house without loving baseball, but it's a very interesting, intricate, things can change in a moment's notice. It seems like it's kind of slow, and then all of a sudden something happens, and I really like it. It's fascinating. So that's maybe I would like to read that as well, Scott.
I wouldn't be surprised. I think you'd find it fascinating, and you know, every once in a while you come across a name you remember. Like for me, it was Scott Posednik.
Oh, sure.
This is a guy who goes from being a World Series hero to a couple years later because of injuries, just trying to decide whether it's worth it to even finish out the minor league season.
Mm.
Good stuff. And Feinstein's quite a writer. I enjoyed it a lot.
Wonderful. Thank you, Scott. Good recommendation. Thanks. Yeah, we can pick that up for a vacation read. Are you a baseball fan?
I have been known to go to a number of games.
Have you?
Upset. I mean, in my own crazy way. Back when I worked at Schwartz, my boss, David Schwartz, was a huge baseball fan, so we would go several times a year, and I usually go at least once a year. For a while, I love city stuff, and so for a number of years in the past, I tried to go to as many stadiums as I could.
Oh, did you?
I read some book about somebody going to every stadium. So I'm like, I'm going to do that. And it became a little more complicated than I thought because I wasn't exactly planning my trips around things. I also had a friend who used to live here who we went to several minor league games together.
Oh.
So Kenosha Twins.
Oh, kind of right. Thing, yeah, you know? It's a great scene, those minor league teams. Mm-hmm. I think it's fun.
Plus, pure. Sort of.
Exactly.
I mean, in some ways more pure and in some ways even crazier.
Yeah.
You know?
I wonder if anybody's done a wonderful book about nonfiction. I'm sure somebody has about the great stadiums. Done just
oh, yeah.
You
no, I read
to
it,
do.
Actually. That's what got me to do it.
Okay.
This is how old it was. It was a county stadium was in it, and it had... It was very enthusiastic about County Stadium. I think it was certainly in the author's top five.
Mm. So. Yeah. Thank you, Scott. Nice to hear from you. Pat in Wauwatosa. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Pat.
This is nonfiction, but it's called The Midwife. It comes in three volumes, the memoirs by Jennifer Worth that the TV show is based on. And everybody I have lent these books to just loves them. I mean, there's some pretty horrendous stuff in there, but it has this redeeming quality of really dedicated people serving really needy people.
Yeah.
Then I have another nonfiction, God's Hotel by Victoria Sweet, which is by a woman who was an internist, kind of traces the medical community from the last maybe 30, 40 years. She was worked in an asylum or the last county hospital in the United States in San Francisco. And she's also working on, during all these years, a PhD in, I don't know if it was the history of medicine, and she kind of intertwines her studies of Hildegard of Bingen in with it. But it's really well written, and it kind of describes, as we see, how the medical services have had to change over the years.
You know,
but Call the Midwife is just a wonderful series.
Yeah, I just happened upon that, flipping channels, about a month ago, and it was, boy, this is fascinating, and I haven't seen. What is it on?
The Channel 10, you mean?
It's on Channel 10.
The series,
okay.
Or you mean the book?
No, the series is on Channel 10. Okay.
Yes, but and it started several years ago.
Oh, it did?
These three volumes, the first one was published in 2002. I think the author died several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But they're so well written and accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And each of the three volumes, I think, has the most perfect endings of books that I've ever read. And as I say, some of the things that she witnessed as a young nurse studying to be a midwife, and she served in, there was a group of nuns, Anglican nuns, who served in the East End of London and the dock area, and they ran this service or clinic until public health, I think, came in England.
Hmm. Thank you, Pat. That sounds good. And it reminds me to look up that TV series as well. Thank you so much. You did this review, Daniel, My Family and Other Hazards.
Yes. That sort of transitions from the scoop book, the ice cream book. This is about a woman whose family ran a miniature golf course.
I love miniature golf courses.
Who doesn't?
I know.
And she is in Waupaca, I believe. So the family actually lived in Iowa, bought the course, moved the family there, and they'd stay there all summer. And the book is just delightful. It's told actually through a tour of the 18 holes, and every hole in miniature golf, of course, not in putt-putt golf, which is more sophisticated, but has a hazard. And so that hazard sort of becomes the jumping off point for what she writes about in the story. We're hosting her in July on the 22nd. She's actually doing bookstores all over the state, Books and Company in Oconomowoc on the 23rd, Room of One's Own in Madison on the 24th, Chapter 2 Books in Hudson on the 31st, and The Reader's Loft on August 12th. So why not talk up the other bookstores? She's also doing a lot of stuff in Iowa. But it's been just a real fun thing. We're having a local author, Mel Miskimen, who had a memoir called Cop's Kid, who's written a book that sort of has the same tone about her a dog that she adopts.
Oh.
But it's a work in progress. So that's why she's the opening reader, because it's actually not published yet. It's like a sneak preview. Which we try to do sometimes, kind of match people up with local people who are working on books.
Nice. So. Are you pretty good at miniature golf?
Well, when I was young, I was rather obsessed with it. I don't think one would say in any sense of the word that I was good, but I was fascinated. And whether we would bicycle over to a miniature golf place with my friends, or if I was on vacation, I would whine a lot until I got to play.
We do that. No,
I was actually, come to think of it, I was terrible.
You had such a good time. It didn't make any difference.
Really didn't.
Yeah, that sounds like fun. Thanks, Pat, for your call. John is next. Hi, John.
Hi. I'm looking for the title of a novel that is set in Sarajevo before World War I. It was published in the last year, I think, in Britain. I heard it discussed on BBC overnight, and I cannot remember the author or the title.
If I was at the store, I could do a very good job on this. That's what people come to me. Basically, that's my job. It's like, okay,
find out what it is.
Nobody can figure this out.
Can you call? Are you going to be there later? Or
of course, I'll be there.
Can you call him later, John, at the store?
And I'm trying to. I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is I did read Tiger's Wife is set, in Sarajevo. Alexander Hemond's books are set in Sarajevo, and he's got at least – and one novel is set contemporary and one is 100 years ago. But actually, I believe the old part is actually set during a bombing in the United States. So, I mean, Hemond is a possible writer. You might want to look at his stuff, but I have to keep thinking about it. Tiger's Wife.
It had quite a bit of subject matter, I think, about espionage by the British, double agents, secret agents.
Oh.
Does that sound familiar?
No. I start thinking of all the different espionage writers I know, Le Carré and Alan First and David Downing. David Downing? I can't remember where his last series was all train stops through Europe, and I can't remember where it stopped. Alan First also, that's the kind of thing he would do, but most of his stuff has been Europe. It hasn't been Western Europe. I will figure it out. I'll tell. I don't know who to tell.
I know what we'll do. Here's what we'll do. We'll have Daniel call you. Is KP listening? KP, can we just put John on hold? Get his phone number, if that's okay, John, and then Daniel will call you when he finds out, and it'll be a welcome phone call, and everybody will be satisfied.
Well, I'll start crying.
I know. Is that okay, John? John?
Well, let's hope it's okay.
Yeah, I think it's okay. I'm sure it's okay.
And I'll put it on if I figure it out, I'll put it on the Facebook page, too.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. That's a good idea. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you, John, so much for your call. Judy in Bailey's Harbor. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
The book I bought earlier this summer and I'm having so much fun with, it's a nonfiction. It's titled Healthy at Home. This is written by Tarone Lowdog, who's a Native American, worked for years as herbalist, and then also became a medical doctor. And she's actually a faculty member at the University of Arizona Center for Integrative Medicine. The reason I love this book is it talks about common problems that every family runs into, little medical kinds of things like colds and flu and sore throats and so on. She talks about simple remedies that can be made from everyday materials. But the neat thing about this book is that she says, okay, if you have these certain symptoms, you don't mess with it at home, you go see your medical doctor. And, that combination of what you can fix at home, what you need to do to go see your medical doctor,
right,
I think is really valuable for a lot of families.
And what's the name of it, Judy?
The title is Healthy at Home.
Healthy at Home.
Right.
All righty. Good. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Take care.
Yeah, you too. Our number is 800-486-8655, and we're talking about summer reading. Daniel Golden is our guest. He's the owner of Boswell Books in Milwaukee, a wonderful independent bookstore, and he has compiled with his staff a whole list of book recommendations, fiction, nonfiction, children's books as well, that we're going to put on our Facebook page. So it's not just the names of the books, it's descriptions, great, lovely written descriptions of all of these books. So go there after the show and you will find them. And let's go back to the list for a moment.
Okay.
Wherever you want to go.
Well, one of the things, I'm waiting for our obligatory Game of Thrones question.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right. Here is our game. Gina on Facebook says that she is currently reading the Game of Thrones books. My husband has done the same. There are 5 in the series, and Gina recently heard that Martin is adding 2 more. What have you, Daniel,
heard
about this?
See, I keep trying to call him.
Does he answer?
No.
No.
So I don't know any more than you do. I know Patrick Rothfuss, who's another big fantasy writer, lives in Stevens Point. He has a novella coming this fall, which we're very excited about. There's a Madison writer, Catherine Addison, who also writes under the name Sarah Monette, who had a wonderful fantasy novel called The Goblin Emperor that came out this spring. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel books editor, Jim Higgins, loved it. And it's sort of what happens when that goblin, there's so many books about the gnome or the goblin who rise, the person working in the bowels of the castle who winds up rising up to take over, and what happens afterwards. So it's the story that we never hear afterwards. Mm. That's a lot of fun. In terms of, there's so much speculative stuff going on nowadays, but I think the really hot thing is the fantasy speculative being woven into traditional thriller and even literary plots. So there's a book that just came out that two of my booksellers really love called The String Diaries by Stephen Lloyd Jones, which I think you would say is a psychological thriller, except that there are these beings that exist with us who can take shapeshift into other bodies. And what happens when someone shapeshifts into the body and kills somebody and splits everybody up. And so they're all on the run. It jumps from starts in Hungary to 1970s England to the present day. I'm kind of Stephen King-esque, I think you would say. It depends on his books. He's pretty speculative. So, two of my booksellers just love that. And I feel like that sort of paranormal, almost horror, almost thriller seems to cross over with fantasy people a lot.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Richard in Madison. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. You guys kind of glossed over what I was going to suggest, and I suggested it to all of my friends and book readers that I know, the Patrick Rothfuss, The Name of the Wind and Wise Man's Fear.
Yes.
I'm a big fiction fantasy fan, and I've read hundreds of books, and those are probably two of the best books that I've ever read. And but then touched on another subject. George R. R. Martin, book 6, I have heard is supposed to be out like late fall, early winter.
My experience with the Rothfuss, I think the novella is really coming. My experience with George R. R. Martin is back when I was a buyer. I don't actually buy for the store now. Jason's a wonderful buyer, so I don't see it as much, but every book seemed to get delayed. So it'd be very exciting. My suspicion is it's going to be announced and be out really quickly, you know, if it does happen. So everybody should be like right by wherever they buy their book saying, is it here yet? Is it here yet? Is it here yet?
Thanks for your call, Richard. We go to, is it Melissa, Stevens Point? Melissa?
Yes, this is Melissa.
Hi, Melissa.
Hi, I'm really enjoying your show.
Great.
Yay.
We're having fun, too.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
Well, I've read a book this summer that I thought was great, and it's called Driftless.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's by David Rhodes. I believe he's a Wisconsin author. I'm not sure. A friend of mine loaned it to me, and it sometimes takes me a while to get into a book, but by, like, the end of the first page, I was pulled in, and the characters are so lovingly created and enlivened, and it was just a really, really lovely book about this fictional community in the Driftless region.
Yeah, a lot of people share your sentiments about that book. He is from Wisconsin.
The rumor is
Isn't
that
he?
They move. He is, but the rumor is that he might have moved back to Iowa this year, for family. So we had wonderful time selling that book and the follow up. Just one of the great Wisconsin books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he really captured the place really well.
Yeah. Do you want to give us, we have neglected children. Do you want to give us a children's book? That's on the list as well.
There are some kids' books here.
Yeah.
I have a few things that I really like. One of the, I mentioned, I put in a few fantasy type books. The one that our buyer Amy is really crazy for is the Glass Sentence. It's part of the Mapmakers trilogy, and it is not exactly dystopian. There's a great disruption where different geographic areas go into different time periods. They're all existing together, and the cartologers are really become the people kind of making sense of the world. And some kids set up on a quest. We've been selling it really well to people who read, you know, any number of the middle grade series, Harry Potter and that kind of thing. Another book that is for a slightly older, it's about the same age, is called The Thickety. It's by J.A. White. And it's some people are comparing it. My bookseller, Mel, compared it to Sleepy Hollow almost.
Oh.
And it's about a girl. I guess there's a crucible element to it as well. A young girl's mother is killed for being a witch, and she's sent into the forest where, of course, she realizes that, they didn't kill her because they didn't think she had the powers. But, of course, she does have the powers. And then she finds her mother's special book, I guess, that has all her things in it. It's a series, but I had like five people read the book. So it's one of those books that's so well done that so many people were reading it that I didn't expect them to read. Huh. I was really surprised. And there's a lot of witch stuff going on. We also have the third volume in the Deborah Harkness series is coming out. That's for adults. It's called The Book of Life. It's the All Souls trilogy. She's coming out in a few weeks, and she's going to be at the store in August. So it's funny that a lot of these stories have like parallel stories in middle grade and adult. You see a lot more crossover. So in the realistic, you know, there's this all these because of John Green, especially, there's just an explosion of high profile, more realistic novels. And one that one of my booksellers really loved is Say What You Will by Cammie McGovern. And it is about two kids, one of whom becomes the other's peer assistant. The difference in the book is that Amy, one of the characters, has cerebral palsy. Mm. And so, you know, sort of almost taking the outcast to another level, the misunderstood hero, just like Rainbow Rowell's Eleanor and Park, which is becoming a movie soon too, where they were just outcast because they were different. I think people with disabilities have the same issues. Is there, you know, one of my best customers has cerebral palsy, and, you know, and I just don't think people understand her. And she's a, you know, just because,
right?
Because she has, you know,
right?
She's different.
Yeah.
So, but, so I love the book because it really humanizes and turns the person into a hero. It's cool.
Yeah. Daniel Golden is our guest. He's cool, and he's with us until 3. He is the owner of Boswell Books, great independent bookstore in Milwaukee, and we're getting you your summer reading list. We're doing a really nice thing this hour. All these books and more will be on our Facebook page with descriptions of the books, which is great, the Kathleen Dentro, and we're taking phone calls and emails and we're busy. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Email talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dentro. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Daniel Golden is with us this hour. And let's go to Jerry in Menasha next. Hi, Jerry.
I'd like to recommend a brilliant blend of history and mystery. The author's name is Christopher Fowler. He's from Britain, and he's written about 5 or 6 books with the same marvelous detectives in them while telling you all about, historically, London before, during, and World War and after World War II. Oh. The combination of this tremendous research he's done about London and these fabulous two detectives that are unique in the genre are so well written. One of the books is called 77 Clocks. Another one is called The Water Room, which I believe is the first one he wrote. And they're very well written.
Ooh, you convinced me. Mm-hmm. That was quite a recommendation. Do you know them?
Books are Peculiar. This is the Peculiar Crimes series, or is it?
No, this, as I say, that doesn't have a, they don't have, it's not a series in, okay. With an official name, but this man, Christopher Fowler, has written the 5 detective novels that center on London.
Yeah. When were
things you never knew about London, things you never knew about World War II, as well as the marvelous mystery that goes through it and the hugely surprise endings and resolutions that these two detectives reveal.
What year? When was it written, these books, Jerry?
These books that were written, I believe the last one came out in about 2005.
Okay.
So they've been on the market for a while, but I've never seen them promoted. And they are, being a lover of mystery, I can tell you this is just absolutely prime.
I hear you. Thank you very much for your call. Nancy in Shorewood. Hi.
Hello. It's funny because Daniel just mentioned Rainbow Rowell, but I want to talk about Fangirl because I liked it much better than Dark and Eleanor. It's two twins that go to college. I read a lot of young adult. I teach middle schoolers, but I think it's higher end or like eighth and up. And one of the twins writes fan fiction, kind of an homage to Harry Potter. And it's just fun. It's probably not the best book I read this year, but by far my favorite. Mm. And if I could recommend a fantasy, you're talking Game of Thrones, but for sixth graders, so without all the sex and violence. A trilogy, and the first book is called False Prince by Jennifer Neeson. And it's about three orphans that have to be chosen to pretend to be the puppet prince. And if they're not chosen, they might be killed. It's kind of Hunger Games, but it's definitely fantasy. And I read the first book as a read-aloud to my sixth graders, and they clapped at the end. Uh-huh. And they've never done that. And then, of course, you read the first book, so you get hooked. So they read the other two.
All right.
I have had a wonderful read on False Prince from Pam, one of our booksellers. Mm. She was also one of the Thickety readers, so that person might enjoy Thickety. There's an adult book that's coming out tomorrow called Queen of the Tearling, and that is the number one Indie Next pick. So it's all the booksellers got together and. Got together and said this is our favorite new book coming out. It's usually breakout books. Usually it's not a superstar because they're trying to help a book get to the next level. So usually rarely see like a high profile book there. But
thanks, Nancy. I hope we've done justice to the events that you're having. And at least we want to let people know where to get information, Daniel.
Oh, sure. It's fossilbooks.com. You know, we have an upcoming events page. And Mel is really great on coding things out further. We have an email newsletter and Facebook page. We're trying to just trying to get a little further ahead, letting folks know about things. Because sometimes people will say, I wanted to go see Deborah Harkness, but I've already made my plans to go away. So we figure at least if we can give people a heads up, they can keep an eye out.
Yeah. So. Mary is our next caller. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a question. I've been waiting patiently for the next in the series of the story of Edgar Sawtelle. I was under the impression that was going to be at least a two or three book series, and I wonder if you know when the next book can be expected.
Interestingly enough, I didn't even know it was a series. I thought it was a standalone. I thought he was just working on his next book. So that's something for me to investigate. We hosted Mr. Robleski for both his. I think we did his hardcover at Schwartz and the paperback here at Boswell. I'm not exactly sure, but I certainly met him, and had a wonderful time and read the book. But there hasn't really been too much talk at all. I do know his editor moved from Echo to a new imprint, her own imprint at Hachette, I think. But his contract is probably still at Echo because very rarely – there's so much moving around of editors, and they rarely get to take the books with them. Mm. So especially if it's a high-profile book like that. We're hosting Garth Stein for his new book, and that moved somehow – I don't know. He wrote The Art of Racing in the Rain, which is another – I am connect the two together for this strange reason that they both prominently feature dogs in them, and they were both incredibly popular.
I like that. I read that one.
Well, the truth of it's been interesting talking to the publicist because he's doing a driving tour. It's very funny. There's some authors it's hard to get out. He's just doing this huge driving tour. That's what these a number of the authors we have coming. June Melby, the woman from the miniature golf course, she's driving everywhere.
Huh.
We're hosting these two memoir writers, a book called Everything That Remains, a memoir of the minimalists about these two pretty successful guys who chucked all their very high-profile, well-paying jobs and decided to live a more simpler life. So they are basically doing it. The books are coming out of their trunk. and it is their own publishing company. And so it's an interesting thing. We're seeing a lot of that. They're coming on June 16th, and they're in Madison on June 18th.
All right. Daniel, thank you. You did not disappoint. We didn't even get to all of the books. So they're on the Facebook page, the Kathleen Dunn Show. Your website is?
BoswellBooks.com.
Try to make easy. Thank you very much. It
pleasure.
Was a great hour. Just flew on by. And we will take a picture. If I can do it on my phone, we'll take a picture of Daniel and put it on Facebook.
Now I have to.
He is looking good. You don't even need to comb your hair. You're
I thought this
good.
Was radio.
I know it is. But you got dressed for TV. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour with Daniel Golden. He is, of course, the owner of Boswell Books in Milwaukee, which is a terrific independent store. Thanks to KP for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Great conversations ahead. We'll be with you tomorrow. Doris Meisner on immigration, the first hour of our program tomorrow, and then the book about the presidents during the Civil War, hour two.